Yes, it's a Thursday. That means it's time to talk to our friend, the Hall of Famer, IA Hall of Famer, Lucy Bird from BetQL. And Lucy, good afternoon. Thank you, as always, for joining us. First and foremost, how was vacation? We didn't get to talk to you last week.
Yes, well, good afternoon. I missed you very much last week. Vacation was great. I did a lot of things, and a lot of it was sitting by the pool. I saw some friends from high school. I saw my godmother. I saw some people I used to work with. So it was a really, really fun kind of fill your bucket kind of time. A lot of it by the pool. But yeah, it was a really nice time.
Did I see you throw a softball?
I did. So there was one day where it was kind of raining. Didn't really have like a ton to do. And so I was just like, oh, let's see if I can still throw the softball and pitch it, because I miss softball pitching so much. I haven't done it since high school in an actual game. But here and there, I see if I can still do it. And the next day, my arm was very sore, which I didn't expect. You always think you're going to be fine and bounce back quickly, but no, age does catch up to you. And I did that, and it was, I will say, started off right off the bat, no wild pitches. So I could say maybe I could still do it, still got it.
Well, we're glad that you had a great trip, Lucy. But with all due respect, I don't think you or anyone is having a better summer than Bill Belichick right now. What is the latest
summer
with Bill?
Of Bill?
You guys, it's the summer of Bill. This is still surreal. Every photo that comes out, I'm like, this is real. This is crazy, because we have never seen Bill Belichick like this before. And he was the last person you would think that would do this, because he, during his coaching career, famously never revealed very much about anything, but especially about himself and about his life. And now we see all at once his entire life and his entire romantic life out there. Not only that, but with someone who is 50 years younger. But also, the ironic thing is that he would always say that he doesn't know much about the kids these days and Snap Face and all that. And now he's dating one of them. He is. And there was the talk about with Mac Jones. Can he relate to younger players? Is that his problem with coaching? He could very much relate to younger people of this age, of their early 20s, because he is dating one of them. This is not only does he have a girlfriend who he's walking around with and pictures are taken and they're like holding hands, and she's 50 years younger than him. So this is completely surreal. He goes to cheerleading competitions for her. He's taking selfies with her. He's posing for pictures. She's rubbing his chest. They're just all like hanging out, riding bikes, and she's all like touching him, like linking arms with him. It's so surreal, but I love it. That's good for them. They're happy. That's what really matters. But it's so surreal to think that this is going on.
We're talking to Lucy Birch, who just to clarify, said no wild pitches earlier. That was pitches with a P. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. Lucy, yes. Any thoughts on the Hawk Tua girl? Seemingly comes out of nowhere, and now she's famous and getting paid $30,000 to do an opening of some nightclub.
Yes. So here is my take on this whole thing, is there are things that go viral that I think are great. Like, oh, this is funny. I see why this is viral. This one is not hitting me. I see why it's viral, but it's not particularly like funny to me. I don't get it. It doesn't hit me in the right, tickle me in the right spot.
Yeah.
Where other things that go viral, it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, oh, I would buy that hat. I would buy that shirt. This is like, okay, we're past it. The first time you see it, it's like, oh, okay. But I don't think she should be as famous as she is right now just for that. It doesn't scream, oh, this is has legs to it. I don't think she should be getting a reality show for this.
That's my thing, Lucy. Where it was like, I feel like when did this interview drop? It's been probably 3 or 4 weeks now at this point, where I'm surprised that she's had the staying power, and the staying power of a reality TV show. Like, what is that going to be?
Right. It's not like she followed up with this with anything like, oh, this bombshell about her life, or like, oh, this could be good, like Honey Boo Boo or something. There's nothing here where this reality show would last more than an episode. Warrant a reality show rather than like a, you know, like 45-minute YouTube behind the scenes of her life. I don't know how it's going to go beyond that. And I don't, just because of that, I don't know. It was like, oh, she was rumored to be a teacher, but she's not actually a teacher. She worked in a spring factory. Like, okay, that doesn't really, it's not grabbing me. It's not, this one, for a second, I was like, yeah, that's funny. But now I'm like, all right, we are well past this. Reality show is not going to pan out. Can guarantee that. And I don't get it. I don't know why. Who is paying for this? This is not my favorite thing to go viral in a while.
But isn't this today though? Like Kim Kardashian, famous for being famous. That's what she is.
True. But Kim Kardashian did become famous for something. I'm like, okay, yes, I can see why. Yeah. But also her reality show, I've been known to throw that on and watch for a little bit. And I think, I'm not going to watch this. And then I get hooked in. Maybe Hawk to a Girl has that, where you start watching and you're like, oh, okay, maybe there is something to this. But just for that moment specifically, it's not anything also particularly earth-shattering. Her technique, that's been done to death. I mean, we already knew that. So she wasn't revealing any secrets. So I'm like, I already knew that, of course. So it wasn't particularly new news here. So, you know, it's just not grabbing me.
I mean, I think part of it's like the accent and just like how she, like the personality part. But we're speaking of Lucy Bird, just Inside Access on The Fan. Lucy, we had a question earlier that was brought up because of yesterday's show. Ken admitted that until today, our boss Chuck brought him in, he had never had a McFlurry until today.
Ooh.
So I was throwing out the question, like, what's a popular fast food menu item that you've never had? I've never been to Popeyes, so therefore I've never had the Popeyes chicken sandwich, which, remember, people were killing each other for. So they had that. Is there a popular fast food menu item you haven't had?
Yes, I can tell you an entire menu I've never had. I've never been to Taco Bell.
By the way, I'm with her on this.
I don't think I've been to Popeyes either. I've never had the Popeyes chicken sandwich. Right. Yeah, never been to Taco Bell. So the chalupa, the whatever that is on the menu there, whatever the roll up with the cheese in it, the cheesy roll up.
That's insert menu item here for them.
The beef roll up. Never had that.
Yeah, it's always funny when they trot out new menu items and it's like, here, let's throw in Fritos and call it something else. You know,
I can appreciate it. So in my mind, I'm like, yeah, I would have a taco with a shell made of Dorito. Like, yeah, I appreciate the creativity of Taco Bell. I just happen to never have been to one. I don't think, I mean, there's been them around me. It's always McDonald's, Burger King, pick your place, but never Taco Bell, which is wild.
So that's what I was going to say. What was your like late night college, fast food spot then? Because McDonald's. Okay.
It was McDonald's. And you know what I would get, though? I would get the yogurt parfait. I was in college. I was sucking.
You know what they say. Nothing a drunk college kid likes more than a yogurt parfait.
Right? Exactly. That's the go-to. Yeah. I was such a, like, square. I would go to, so MIT frat, which happens to be two streets over from where I live right now, in college, we would leave the MIT frat and we would go to the McDonald's down the street, and I would get a yogurt parfait while we waited for the bus to bring us back to Wellesley, and I got my little yogurt parfait, and I was like, yeah, everyone else getting their burgers, and I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna have this, thanks. And that was my go-to. So you think I've been to Taco Bell? No, but I used to, as a kid, McDonald's all the time, McFlurry after soccer games, after softball games, always.
Before we get to your picks, I asked this for a reason, because I'm going somewhere with it. Are you a coffee drinker?
Oh, good God, so
what do you think about drinking a hot cup of coffee on a 100-degree day?
I can get with that, because I do prefer cold brew coffee.
Okay, yes.
But if it has caffeine in it, and that's your only way, it wouldn't be my preferred way of drinking it in hot weather. But I mean, if it has caffeine in it, I will drink it. So if someone said, "Well, your only option," then yeah.
No, so here's the scenario where Bone and I are in the press box last night at Oral Park at Camden Yards, where they do have a soda machine with caffeinated cold beverages. By the way, the press box is open air. It's 100 degrees with 100% humidity last night. He comes into the press box carrying a bottle of water and a piping hot cup of coffee.
I think
he's a serial killer.
We were at Pickles, which is a bar right across the street from Camden Yards, and it was windy as hell yesterday. So really, it wasn't bad out. I guess I was thinking that it was going to be similar inside of the press box, which was
not true.
A fail on my part, but I still drank the coffee.
He did, because he's a sicko.
Yeah.
Right. Well, here's where you went right with this. So my dad's aunt, who lived to be 102, she would always, on hot days, she would say, drink hot beverages because it will make the outside temperature feel cooler. Mm. And she, again, lived to be 102. Yeah. So she had, that was one of her secrets. And so I think you went right with this. You probably added like a year or two to your life.
Bone, I can't wait to see your anxiety when you're 90.
Lucy, this is why you're the best.
Yeah.
This is why you're the best.
I think you went right with that because that makes the outside, actually, that's you were actually smart. And everyone else is like, oh, you know, sorry that you didn't get this trick because the outside feels cooler when your body is warmer.
Yeah, I was sweating on the outside. He was sweating on the inside. let's get to your picks. You are the Dong Queen. You got a couple for us today?
Yes, I have Yandy Diaz, who hit a home run. He's hit one home run in his last four games. He's had 8 home runs this season. But against Nestor Cortez, going up against the Yankees, he is batting .400 with 3 home runs, 4 doubles, 5 singles against him. And Nestor Cortez has allowed a home run in each of his last 3 starts. I also have another one in that game, and it's Aaron Judge, who hit a home run because he hits home runs a lot. But he has not hit one since July 2nd, so he's due, and he has 2 home runs in his last 9 games. So I think he can hit one tonight as well.
Well, before we let you go, Lucy, I mean, you say it all the time on Twitter, Red Sox winning the World Series. Are they going to catch the Yankees?
Yes, they are.
Are they going to catch the Orioles?
No. We're not going to get into that, Ken.
Red Sox are buyers, and the window is a door now, Alex Cora said, that's all you got me at that. Yeah, they're going to win the World Series. People are asking me, are they going to make the playoffs? And they're going to win the World Series. So, yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Lucy Burge, let the people know where they can find you.
Yes, so Bet Slips and Bat Flips on the BetQL Network, weekdays 2 to 2:30 Eastern. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lucille Burge.
Lucy, always great. You're a Hall of Famer for a reason. We appreciate your time, and we'll chat next week.
You guys are the best. I will talk to you guys next week.
Thanks so much. Hey, coming up next, Justin Matabike did a poll on ESPN where they talked to scouts and GMs and coaches, and they ranked the defensive tackles. Where was Justin Matabike? We'll tell you, and we'll also talk about what this pass rush could look like this season. That's next here on The Fan.
How do they fare here on their opening drive of the second half? They go play action, fake handoff to Pierce. Stroud running for his life, except Matabike atones for that critical face mask late first half. Second sack of Stroud for the Ravens.
Justin Matabike getting a sack against Houston last year. He had 13 of them. He also had 33 quarterback pressures. And according to the scouts / coaches / execs that Jeremy Fowler talked to, only Chris Jones, Quinnen Williams, Derek Lawrence, and Dexter Lawrence and Jeffrey Simmons were considered better. He's the 5th-ranked defensive tackle in football.
Yeah, it's good to see that Justin Matabike is getting some well-deserved respect from those around the NFL. And in the blurb that Jeremy Fowler put out about Matabike, after 3 years as a complimentary player, Matabike took his star turn in 2023, had more opportunities because no Calais Campbell, Tyus Bowser was hurt, 13 sacks, leads all the players on the list. Matabike also ranks 2nd among defensive tackles in pressures with 33. Unnamed AFC executive says disruptive in both phases, but power was his most improved tool, playing with a ton of confidence. Another AFC coordinator said mindset and opportunity. The kid put in the work with his body and overall football information. He was locked in all year, and he absolutely was. He tied an NFL record with 11 consecutive games in which he recorded half a sack. And that is, in the 11-game stretch, he had 37 tackles, 9 tackles for a loss, 11 sacks, 29 quarterback hits in 11 games, Ken. That's almost 3 a game. I mean, he was just, he was a freak. He had an Aaron Donald-type season last year, and it was massive for Eric DaCosta to get that contract done where you didn't have to worry about the July deadline or is he going to have to play on the tag and how would the franchise tag have hamstrung this team a bit. Maybe they would have had to have had more roster cuts or more restructures if Matabike was still on the tag. So to get him done was huge, and you locked up an ascending player because he was coming off his best year. His numbers across the board got better year after year after year, and now he's still just 27 years old. Is he going to match the 13 sacks? I don't know if that's fair expectations, but I think he will get double-digit sacks again.
Yeah, and I just wonder what this means for the pass rush, which led the league in sacks a year ago. Obviously, you lost Jadeveon Clowney, Patrick Queen. You know, Kyle Van Noy is back, but he doesn't have Clowney on the other side. Like, what's this whole thing going to look like? Owe, we talked to Jonas Schaefer earlier this week. He thinks the metrics predict a breakout season for Owe. Don't know what Ajabo is going to give him, but like, can this pass rush, while not lead the league in sacks, can at least be feared?
Yeah, I think regression is inevitable for this group and defense as a whole, and that's not to say that this defense is going to be bad next year. I still think it'll be good, but they led the league in turnovers. They led the league in sacks and points per game. And that was the first time that ever happened before. But the sack aspect was something that none of us saw. I mean, we were talking pass rush, pass rush leading into it. And you had guys have career years. Clowney, 9.5 sacks. That tied a career high. Van Noy had 9 sacks. Is he going to reach that again this year? Patrick Queen, 3.5 sacks. You got to replace those as well. So Clowney and Queen, that's 13 sacks right there. And that's where you're looking at other guys to try and eat into that total. Owe was a name we brought up earlier. Is this finally the year where he can take the next step? He got close. The metrics liked him. But is he going to be able to finish this year?
Can Ajabo get 3.5 sacks? Can he match Patrick Queen's sack total? If I set Ajabo's sack total at 3.5, are you going over or under, Bun?
I mean, it all depends on his health, right? And even if he plays
let's say he's healthy. Are you going over 3.5 sacks?
If he's healthy, I'd say over. Maybe that's maybe an optimist. Like, that's not a big sack total for an outside linebacker. He did not impress last year.
What have you seen that leads you to believe he can get more than 3.5 sacks?
I'm
just asking a hypothetical.
Sure, no. I think I'm just being optimistic. Like, maybe Chuck Smith can unlock some things another year here. Yeah. But no, it was bad last year. And he's going to be one of those players when we're all out there during training camp that's going to be under a microscope because it's a pivotal year 3 for him. It's put up or shut up time for David Ajabo. And even last year when he was healthy during training camp throughout the preseason, he didn't impress. He failed to set the edge well. He failed even during one-on-one drills against the Commanders, the joint practices.
Orioles back in action tonight trying to salvage one game of this 3-game series against the Cubs. They're not hitting with runners in scoring position. They're 8-10 in the last 18 games. How concerned is Jacob Calvin-Meyer? We'll ask him next here on The Fan. Orioles lose last night 4-0. They are 8-10 in the last 18 games, and they seem to be allergic to hitting with runners in scoring position. And joining us now to talk some Orioles baseball, our buddy Jacob Calvin-Meyer covers the Orioles for the Baltimore Sun. So, Jacob, thank you as always for joining us. They are still in first place. They have one of the best records in baseball. How concerned are you about what you're seeing with the Orioles right now?
Yeah, I would say the concern level is pretty low, but at the end of the day, you know, they're 8-10 in their past 18. The offense is not scoring as many runs as it was earlier in the season. and I don't need to remind anybody about the struggles with runners in scoring position. So, you know, these are the lulls that happen through a season. They're still middle of the pack in you know, offensive production with runners in scoring position. You expected coming into the season a little bit of regression in that area after they led Major League Baseball in production in clutch situations last year. And I think they've been able to overcome some of that regression because of the increase in home runs. But when you go through a little bit of a drought with the home runs, you're kind of seeing the result of that. And so, you know, there's some fear of being too home run dependent when you get to October, but actually studies have shown that the teams that are more home run dependent actually perform better in October than the teams who aren't. Now, that's not going to help anybody if they get swept in the postseason again and they don't hit any home runs. But I don't think it's too much of a cause for concern at the moment.
Would you say that this team is too home run reliant?
No, I don't think so. But a couple more weeks of this, then yeah. But I would not say that at the current moment. I think this team has still shown that they can pass the torch, whatever cliche you want to use. I do think at times it's not as prolific as it was last year. I remember last year there were multiple instances where they, you know, batted around in a game, and it just felt like they were singling and walking teams to death. Whereas this year it feels more of a powerful approach. At the end of the day, I believe they're still tops of the league in runs per game and a lot of other offensive categories, specifically slugging percentage and home run. But I wouldn't say they're too home run reliant, but you know, I do think they can improve in terms of the quality of their at-bats on a nightly basis.
Jacob, they're facing another lefty tonight, and it brings up the fact that it'd be a nice time to have Kobe Mayo in the major leagues. It just seems clear and clear that Ramon Urias, and to me at least, that Ramon and Jorge Mateo just don't look like everyday players. How soon do you think we see Kobe Mayo?
Yeah, I said a couple weeks ago that I would be surprised if he wasn't up here by the end of the month. I would probably still stick by that. This week did seem like a perfect opportunity given how many lefties are going to see on this homestand, but alas, it's not the case. But I think there's a lot of, not a lot, there's a couple factors here that maybe not everybody knows for sure. And the big one is, and it's kind of a quagmire, and it's, is Kobe Mayo's defense good enough to play up here on a regular basis? And if he is up here, how do you play him? Where do you play him? And if his defense isn't good enough, do you still call him up, still play him at third every once in a while, and then DH him a significant amount of the time? It's a question mark because you look at the prospects that they've caught up in the past. You've got Adley and Gunner. They got caught up and played every day. And then you have the guys like Kowser and Joey Ortiz and Connor Norby, and they got caught up and did not play a ton. I think Kobe Mayo would probably slot into where Jordan Westberg did last season. If you remember, he started around two-thirds of the games, played most of the games either pinch hitting or coming in as a defensive replacement. I would think Kobe Mayo, whenever he does get called up, gets a similar treatment to what Westberg got last year, where he's going to maybe play two-thirds of the games, and maybe they don't want to call him up too soon and have him, you know, maybe not get as many at-bats as he would get down there.
Jacob, the Orioles made a roster move, bringing up Birch Smith from AAA, optioning Dylan Tate. I believe last week for The Sun, you put out an article just of all the other options.
Yeah, where was Birch Smith, Jacob? I didn't see Birch Smith in the piece.
I know. I was kicking myself today about not including Birch Smith.
No, I guess, were you surprised that the Tucker Davidsons, Chase McDermott, that they didn't opt for one of those guys in your piece?
No, well, slightly, a little bit of inside baseball. There were like 8 or 9 names that I had listed, and I was like, you know what, it's probably more compelling if I keep this list to like 4 players instead of 8. So I can, you know, you guys don't know if I'm telling the truth or not. But
yes, yes.
No, I'm not necessarily surprised. I think if you're going to send out a right-handed reliever, it makes sense to call up a righty. And then if you look at the other righties that were candidates, Chase McDermott's one of them. He came off one of his worst outings of the season on Saturday, and perhaps they still see him as a starting pitcher right now, or they don't want to make that move yet to bring him up and pitch him out of the bullpen. And Birch Smith is a guy that, at least for the short term, you know, he has a significant amount of professional experience. And so if you're going to say, hey, we need a bullpen arm, maybe we want to get Dylan Tate some more work in AAA, you know, it makes sense to call up a veteran who can, you know, probably maybe have a a lower ceiling but a higher floor than a younger guy that doesn't have as much experience.
We're talking to Jacob Calvin-Meyer. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. Jacob, maybe this is my lunacy, but I am curious to get your thoughts on this, and I've been talking about it since the probables came out. I want Corbin Burns pitching on Tuesday so that he can pitch in the Yankee series. I don't personally care about the All-Star game. He's pitching on Wednesday. And maybe I'm way off on this. I feel like he wants to pitch in the All-Star game, so he's pitching Wednesday, so he's eligible for the All-Star game. Am I nuts?
Yes, you're nuts, but yeah. Maybe not for this reason. I understand those arguments. I think there's a couple factors here. One, you can't ignore the fact that Corbin and his wife just had twins. He flew back home on Monday. He's kind of been all over the place. I don't need to explain to anybody that probably having twins and dealing with that is probably something that takes a lot out of you. And so maximizing him to an extent where he's going to start on 4 days rest a couple times in a row in the hottest month of the year, might not make a ton of sense. Secondly, Corbin Burns is the caliber of pitcher that he probably gets a pretty heavy say in his schedule. And so if Corbin really wanted to pitch on Tuesday and Sunday, that's probably what would have happened. And that's so he deserves the right to want to pitch in the All-Star game. This team does have a little bit of wiggle room here. They've played really well this season. It's not like they're fighting for a wild card spot in every single game. It's kind of life or death. And then the last thing that might have played a factor here is I don't know how many times you want Corbin Burns to really pitch against the Yankees this year. If that's your most likely opponent in an ALCS, I know it's looking ahead a little bit too much, but, man, it could be nice to have Corbin Burns go into a potential seven-game series against the Yankees and haven't faced them all season, and then, he has to go out and face them a couple of times in a playoff series. That actually could be a benefit. So there's a lot of factors to this one. I do understand that it would have been nice to perhaps maximize him, but if you really go through it, if he had pitched on Tuesday, I know not everything's equal, they probably still lose that game because of the offense, and then who knows what's going to happen on Sunday.
Jacob, the Orioles, it seems like we got a couple of platoons in the outfield, although Brandon Hyde going a little bit different, swapping out Colton Cowser for Cedric Mullins against the lefty and Justin Steele today. But the Hayes, Kerstad, Mullins, Cowser platoons, what do you think of them?
Yeah, I think it's a couple different ones. So the it seems like Hayes and Kerstad is becoming a legitimate platoon. It's not that they're both, it's not that they're always in left field every day, but since Kerstad was called up, I think they've played 15 games, and one of those guys, but not both, has been in the lineup 13 of the 15 games. So it's really a platoon between those guys, with Hayes mostly playing against lefties and Kerstad mostly playing against righties. And the production there has been great. Both of those guys are tearing the cover off of the ball. The challenging thing with this team at the moment is I don't know if you could say that they're down a right-handed bat, although that might go into the Coby Mayo argument. But yeah. Against left-handed pitchers, this lineup is kind of weird because Colton Cowser has been playing a lot. Most of his playing time recently has come against left-handed starting pitchers. He's not in the lineup tonight. That's Cedric Mullins. But for Colton Cowser, who's hitting much better against righties than against lefties, his easiest path to playing time at the moment is playing center field against lefties, because you need to have either Mullins or Cowser in center. And so, but they're both left-handed hitters. So that's kind of the weirdest part about the current construction of the team right now is when they face a left-handed pitcher, who plays in center, and then how much of that player's playing time is really coming against pitchers that they don't match up well against.
Jacob, before we let you go, be remiss. We're 19 days away from the deadline. How aggressive are you expecting the Orioles to be as we're less than 3 weeks out?
Probably not as aggressive as fans would like them to be, but maybe a little bit more aggressive than last year. Does that make sense? So I don't...
That's a low bar, Jacob.
Yeah, there's a lot of low bars, but we won't get into that. So I think it's unlikely from where I sit, and again, this is just speculation, that this team goes out and gives up one of their top prospects to get a pitcher like Garrett Crochet or Skubal, who, has maybe a little bit of a track record, but for Crochet specifically, might have to be a reliever this year, has already had a history of arm injuries, doesn't have a track record of pitching in the postseason or being any sort of innings eater. And you give up one of your top prospects for a guy that you just never know what's going to happen to these pitchers, and then you lose 6 years of Kobe Mayo or Samuel Basayo. And so I think there are a lot of pitchers on the market who fill a blended role of being good enough to be this team's number two or three starter, who can fill innings, who has a track record, but will not cost you a ton. And so just one name, again, total speculation, but I think it makes some sense, is a guy like Zach Eflin for the Rays. The Rays, if they decide to sell at the deadline, Eflin has a contract. He's due $18 million next year, so that's a factor for the Orioles if they want to pay that. But Eflin's a guy that has experience in the playoffs. He's a veteran. He has a track record of, you know, staying healthy. He's one of the best strike throwers in baseball. He would be this team's number three starter. And so I think that fits a lot of the things that you're looking for. And so that's my guess is what they do, is they go out and get a pitcher that can slot in as a credible number two or number three starter in this rotation.
Orioles try to salvage 1-3 against the Cubs tonight. Jacob Calvin-Meyer covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. Jacob, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Hey, coming up next, we'll take a look at some of those numbers we talked to with Jacob about the runners in scoring position. Just how bad have they been hitting with runners in scoring position of late? We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.
Yeah, I just think once you start leaving runners out there, I think it's natural. Once you start leaving runners out there, we get in a situation again. I think when the next guy comes up, you're trying to, make it happen. A little bit instead of letting it happen. I think our guys' swings just get the last couple nights maybe a little bit too big. And maybe expand a little bit, but more of just kind of the approach and the swing, trying to drive in two or three instead of just taking the at-bat and being short to the ball. Continuing with the same really good approach of middle the other way. So many RBI situations. The most beautiful thing is a runner in scoring position, a base hit the other way. And we're just not really allowing ourselves to do that because I feel like our swings are just a little big.
Brandon Hyde speaking to the media earlier today and talking about the struggles with runners in scoring position. The Orioles, over their last eight games, Bone, they are 12-68. That's a .176 batting average over the last eight games with runners in scoring position.
It's been ugly. In the last 11 games, they're averaging just 3.5 runs per game. But if you just look at the chances that they had.
Orioles lose last night 4-0. They are 8-10 in their last 18 games, and they seem to be allergic to hitting with runners in scoring position. And joining us now to talk some Orioles baseball, our buddy Jacob Calvin-Meyer covers the Orioles for the Baltimore Sun. So, Jacob, thank you as always for joining us. They are still in first place. They have one of the best records in baseball. How concerned are you about what you're seeing with the Orioles right now?
Yeah, I would say the concern level is pretty low. But at the end of the day, you know, they're 8-10 in their past 18. The offense is not scoring as many runs as it was earlier in the season. And I don't need to remind anybody about the struggles with runners in scoring position. So, you know, these are the lulls that happen through a season. They're still middle of the pack in offensive production with runners in scoring position. You expected coming into the season a little bit of regression in that area after they led Major League Baseball in production in clutch situations last year. And I think they've been able to overcome some of that regression because of the increase in home runs. But when you go through a little bit of a drought with the home runs, you're kind of seeing the result of that. And so, you know, there's some fear of being too home run dependent when you get to October. But actually, studies have shown that the teams that are more home run dependent actually perform better in October than the teams who aren't. Now, that's not going to help anybody if they get swept in the postseason again and they don't hit any home runs. But I don't think it's too much of a cause for concern at the moment.
Would you say that this team is too home run reliant?
No, I don't think so. But a couple more weeks of this, then yeah. But I would not say that at the current moment. I think this team has still shown that they can pass the torch, whatever cliche you want to use. I do think at times it's not as prolific as it was last year. I remember last year there were multiple instances where they, you know, batted around in a game, and it just felt like they were singling and walking teams to death. Whereas this year, it feels more of a powerful approach. At the end of the day, I believe they're still tops of the league in runs per game and a lot of other offensive categories, specifically slugging percentage and home run. But I wouldn't say they're too home run reliant, but you know, I do think they can improve in terms of the quality of their at-bats on a nightly basis.
Jacob, they're facing another lefty tonight, and it brings up the fact that it be a nice time to have Coby Mayo in the major leagues. It just seems clear and clear that Ramon Urias, and to me at least, that Ramon and Jorge Mateo just don't look like everyday players. How soon do you think we see Coby Mayo?
Yeah, I said a couple weeks ago that I would be surprised if he wasn't up here by the end of the month. I would probably still stick by that. This week did seem like a perfect opportunity given how many lefties are going to see on this homestand, but alas, it's not the case. But I think there's a lot of not a lot. There's a couple factors here that maybe not everybody knows for sure. And the big one is, and it's kind of a quagmire, and it's, is Coby Mayo's defense good enough to play up here on a regular basis? And if he is up here, how do you play him? Where do you play him? And if his defense isn't good enough, do you still call him up, still play him at third every once in a while, and then DH him a significant amount of the time? It's a question mark because you look at the prospects that they've caught up in the past. You've got Adley and Gunner. They got caught up and played every day. And then you have the guys like Kowser and Joey Ortiz and Connor Norby, and they got called up and did not play a ton. I think Coby Mayo would probably slot into where Jordan Westberg did last season. If you remember, he started around 2/3 of the games, played most of the games either pinch hitting or coming in as a defensive replacement. I would think Coby Mayo, whenever he does get called up, gets a similar treatment to what Westberg got last year, where he's going to maybe play 2/3 of the games, and maybe they don't want to call him up too soon and have him, you know, maybe not get as many at-bats as he would get down there.
Jacob, the Orioles made a roster move, bringing up Birch Smith from AAA, optioning Dylan Tate. I believe last week for The Sun, you put out an article just of all the other options.
Yeah, where was Birch Smith, Jacob? I didn't see Birch Smith in the piece.
I know. I was kicking myself today about not including Birch Smith.
No, I guess, were you surprised that the Tucker Davidsons, Chase McDermott, that they didn't opt for one of those guys in your piece?
No, well, slightly, a little bit of inside baseball. There were like 8 or 9 names that I had listed, and I was like, you know what, it's probably more compelling if I keep this list to like 4 players instead of 8. So I can, you know, you guys don't know if I'm telling the truth or not. The Birch Smith was on that list
of
players.
Yes.
No, I'm not necessarily surprised. I think if you're going to send out a right-handed reliever, it makes sense to call up a righty. And then if you look at the other righties that were candidates, Chase McDermott's one of them. He came off one of his worst outings of the season on Saturday, and perhaps they still see him as a starting pitcher right now, or they don't want to make that move yet to bring him up and pitch him out of the bullpen. And Birch Smith is a guy that, at least for the short term, you know, he has a significant amount of professional experience. And so, if you're going to say, hey, we need a bullpen arm, maybe we want to get Dylan Tate some more work in AAA, you know, it makes sense to call up a veteran who can, you know, probably maybe have a lower ceiling but a higher floor than a younger guy that doesn't have as much experience.
We're talking to Jacob Calvin-Meyer, Inside Access here on The Fan. Jacob, maybe this is my lunacy, but I am curious to get your thoughts on this, and I've been talking about it since the probables came out. I want Corbin Burns pitching on Tuesday so that he can pitch in the Yankees series. I don't personally care about the All-Star game. He's pitching on Wednesday. And maybe I'm way off on this. I feel like he wants to pitch in the All-Star game, so he's pitching Wednesday, so he's eligible for the All-Star game. Am I nuts?
Yes, you're nuts, but yeah. Maybe not for this reason. I understand those arguments. I think there's a couple factors here. One, you can't ignore the fact that Corbin and his wife just had twins. He flew back home on Monday. He's kind of been all over the place. I don't, you know, need to explain to anybody that probably having twins and dealing with that is probably something that takes a lot out of you. And so maximizing him to an extent where he's going to start on 4 days rest a couple times in a row in the hottest month of the year, you know, might not make a ton of sense. Secondly, Corbin Burns is the caliber of pitcher that he probably gets a pretty heavy say in his schedule. And so if Corbin really wanted to pitch on Tuesday and Sunday, that's probably what would have happened. And that's so he deserves the right to want to pitch in the All-Star game. This team does have a little bit of wiggle room here. You know, they've played really well this season. It's not like they're, you know, fighting for a wild card spot in every single game. It's kind of life or death. And then the last thing that might have played a factor here is I don't know how many times you want Corbin Burns to really pitch against the Yankees this year. If that's your most likely opponent in an ALCS, you know, I know it's looking ahead a little bit too much, But, man, it could be nice to have Corbin Burns go into a potential seven-game series against the Yankees and haven't faced them all season. And then, you know, he has to go out and face them a couple of times in a playoff series. That actually could be a benefit. So there's a lot of factors to this one. I do understand that it would have been nice to perhaps maximize him. But if you really go through it, if he had pitched on Tuesday, I know not everything's equal, they probably still lose that game because of the offense. And then who knows what's going to happen on Sunday.
Jacob, the Orioles, it seems like we got a couple of platoons in the outfield, although Brandon Hyde going a little bit different, swapping out Colton Cowser for Cedric Mullins against the lefty and Justin Steele today. But the Hayes, Kerstad, Mullins, Cowser platoons, what do you think of them?
Yeah, I think it's a couple different ones. So the it seems like Hayes and Kerstad is becoming a legitimate platoon. It's not that they're both, you know, it's not that they're always in left field every day, but since Kerstad was called up, I think they've played 15 games, and one of those guys, but not both, has been in the lineup 13 of the 15 games. So it's really a platoon between those guys, with Hayes mostly playing against lefties and Kerstad mostly playing against righties. And the production there has been great. Both of those guys are tearing the cover off of the ball. The challenging thing with this team at the moment is I don't know if you could say that they're down a right-handed bat, although that might go into the Coby Mayo argument. But yeah. Against left-handed pitchers, this lineup is kind of weird because Colton Cowser has been playing a lot. Most of his playing time recently has come against left-handed starting pitchers. He's not in the lineup tonight. That's Cedric Mullins. But for Colton Cowser, who's hitting much better against righties than against lefties, his easiest path to playing time at the moment is playing center field against lefties, because you need to have either Mullins or Cowser in center. And so, but they're both left-handed hitters. So that's kind of the weirdest part about the current construction of the team right now is when they face a left-handed pitcher, who plays in center, and then how much of that player's playing time is really coming against pitchers that they don't match up well against.
Jacob, before we let you go, be remiss. We're 19 days away from the deadline. How aggressive are you expecting the Orioles to be as we're less than 3 weeks out?
Probably not as aggressive as fans would like them to be, but maybe a little bit more aggressive than last year. Does that make sense? So I don't...
That's a low bar, envision... Jacob.
Yeah, there's a lot of low bars, but we won't get into that. So... I think it's unlikely from where I sit, and again, this is just speculation, that this team goes out and gives up one of their top prospects to get a pitcher like Garrett Crochet or Skubal, who, you know, has maybe a little bit of a track record, but for Crochet specifically, might have to be a reliever this year, has already had a history of arm injuries, doesn't have a track record of pitching in the postseason or being any sort of innings eater. And you give up one of your top prospects for a guy that you just never know what's going to happen to these pitchers, and then you lose 6 years of Coby Mayo or Samuel Basayo. And so I think there are a lot of pitchers on the market who fill a blended role of being good enough to be this team's number two or three starter, who can fill innings, who has a track record, but will not cost you a ton. And so just one name, again, total speculation, but I think it makes some sense, is a guy like Zach Eflin for the Rays. The Rays, if they decide to sell at the deadline, Eflin has a contract. He's due $18 million next year, so that's a factor for the Orioles if they want to pay that. But Eflin's a guy that has experience in the playoffs. He's a veteran. He has a track record of, you know, staying healthy. He's one of the best strike throwers in baseball. He would be this team's number three starter. And so I think that fits a lot of the things that you're looking for. And so that's my guess is what they do, is they go out and get a pitcher that can slot in as a credible number two or number three starter in this rotation.
Orioles try to salvage 1-3 against the Cubs tonight. Jacob Calvin-Meyer covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. Jacob, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Hey, coming up next, we'll take a look at some of those numbers we talked to with Jacob about the runners in scoring position. Just how bad have they been hitting with runners in scoring position of late? We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.
Yeah, I just think once you start leaving runners out there, I think it's natural. Once you start leaving runners out there, we get in a situation again. I think when the next guy comes up, you're trying to make it happen a little bit instead of letting it happen. I think our guys' swings just get the last couple nights maybe a little bit too big, and maybe expand a little bit. But more of just kind of the approach and the swing, trying to drive in two or three instead of just taking the at bat and being short to the ball. continuing with the same really good approach of middle the other way. So many RBI situations. You know, the most beautiful thing is a runner scoring position, a base hit the other way. And we're just not really allowing ourselves to do that because I feel like our swings are just a little big.
Brandon Hyde speaking to the media earlier today and talking about the struggles with runners in scoring position. The Orioles, over their last eight games, Bone, they are 12 for 68. That's a 176 batting average over the last eight games with runners in scoring position.
It's been ugly. In the last 11 games, they're averaging just 3.5 runs per game. But if you just look at the chances that they had last night, and it started in the bottom of the first. Anthony Santander is up. Runners on first and second, one out. Strikeout, Westberg, strikeout. Then in the second inning, Hayes led off the inning with a double. Mateo grounded out, Kowser flied out, McCann fouled out. And then more strikeouts where McCann hit the ground rule double. Henderson struck out, Rutschman, and Adley had a strikeout in between the rain delay as well. So a lot of these situations, not even putting the ball in play against these guys. And on the season, they're 16th in batting average with runners in scoring position, 13th in batting average with runners in scoring position and two outs. So obviously this is a dreadful stretch, but even season long, despite this offense as potent as they are, middle of the pack in terms of runners in scoring position numbers.
So I'll ask you what I asked Jacob Calvin-Meyer last segment. Are you concerned? He's not concerned, are you? I know what Jason would say. He's obviously out.
Yeah, I'm not super concerned. I just think this offense has so much talent in it to be struggling like it is right now. But I do understand like some of the parallels to last year, and that offense was really scuffling in September. That carried over into October, and then they had that nightmare series against the Rangers. I just think this year's offense is way better than last year's offense. Obviously has more pop in it. I don't know, Ken.
The reality is, yeah, the reality is that you're going to go through a stretch like this.
Baseball.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm thrilled with what they're doing right now. I mean, it's been bad. It's been rough to watch.
Hey, we were sitting there in the heat last night. You're chugging a hot coffee, and I'm looking at you going, they can't get a hit with runners in scoring position. And then we see Westberg hit a ball we think's a homer. It's off the top of the wall. And I just, like, second and third, one out, Austin Hayes strikes out. Like, you just, they're not taking advantage of opportunities. And they're getting hits, but when it's time to get the hit, like, they had nine hits last night. When it was time to get the hit, it's just not there.
They just haven't gotten the hit recently, and that's kind of why I asked Jacob the question. 52.8% of runs scored have been off homer. I mean, do you think this offense is too homer reliant?
It's not the 2016 Orioles.
That's where I'm at too. Where that's different. Yeah. I mean, that was all or nothing. You know, home run or strike.
Well, I used to say it was a beer league softball team. Like there was no athleticism really on that team. Adam Jones could run, but the rest of it, like yeah. So I think that this team has shown in the past it can get it done doing other things. I think they will get back to that. It's unfortunate, and it seems to happen every year. And I'm sure it happens with every team. We just don't pay as close attention. But there's a point in time in every season where a team goes into a slump. The Yankees are like, they can't hit. Like, there's a period, and you try to hope that the slumps don't happen together, so one guy kind of carries you for a while until the next guy, because guys will slump, otherwise everybody's hitting 500. But am I concerned? I'm not happy, but I'm not concerned yet.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. And this is a tough stretch. I mean, they're 8-10 in their last 18 games, and what this Orioles team has done so well since bringing up Adley Rutschman in May 2022 is, of course, they don't get swept much. They've been swept twice in the regular season, of course, in the ALDS last year against the Rangers. And now it's about trying to avoid that third sweep this year, pick up a win tonight, and then head into that Yankees series, which should be a lot of fun.
Well, coming up next here on the program, Brandon Hyde. You heard a taste of what he said earlier today, but Brandon Hyde met with the media today. We'll get you the lineup, and you'll hear what Brandon Hyde has to say as the Orioles try to avoid the sweep tonight. Albert Suarez on the mound. Baltimore baseball tonight coming up at 5:30. Bob Haney, Jim Hunter, live at Pickles here on The Fan.
Yeah, I just think once you start leaving runners out there, I think it's natural. Once you start leaving runners out there, you get in a situation again. I think when the next guy comes up, you're trying to make it happen. A little bit instead of letting it happen. I think our guys' swings just the last couple nights maybe a little bit too big. And maybe expand a little bit, but more of just kind of the approach and the swing, trying to drive in two or three instead of just taking the at-bat and being short to the ball, continuing with the same really good approach of middle the other way. So many RBI situations. The most beautiful thing is a runner scoring position, a base hit the other way. And we're just not really allowing ourselves to do that because I feel like our swings are just a little big.
Brandon Hyde speaking to the media earlier today and talking about the struggles with runners in scoring position. The Orioles, over their last eight games, Bone, they are 12-for-68. That's a .176 batting average over the last eight games with runners in scoring position.
It's been ugly. In the last 11 games, they're averaging just 3.5 runs per game. But if you just look at the chances that they had last night, and it started in the bottom of the first. Anthony Santander is up. Runners on first and second, one out. Strikeout, Westberg, strikeout. Then the second inning, Hayes led off the inning with a double. Mateo grounded out, Kowser flied out, McCann fouled out. And then more strikeouts where McCann hit the ground rule double. Henderson struck out, Rutschman. And Adley had a strikeout in between the rain delay as well. So a lot of these situations, not even putting the ball in play against these guys. And on the season, they're 16th in batting average with runners in scoring position, 13th in batting average with runners in scoring position and two outs. So obviously this is a dreadful stretch, but even season long, despite this offense as potent as they are, middle of the pack in terms of runners in scoring position numbers.
So I'll ask you what I asked Jacob Calvin-Meyer last segment. Are you concerned? He's not concerned, are you? I know what Jason would say. He's obviously out.
Yeah, I'm not super concerned. I just think this offense has so much talent in it to be struggling like it is right now. But I do understand like some of the parallels to last year, and that offense was really scuffling in September. That carried over into October, and then they had that nightmare series against the Rangers. I just think this year's offense is way better than last year's offense. Obviously has more pop in it. I don't know, Ken.
The reality is that you're going to go through a stretch
like this. Baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm thrilled with what they're doing right now. I mean, it's been bad. It's been rough to watch.
Hey, we were sitting there in the heat last night. You're chugging a hot coffee, and I'm looking at you going, they can't get a hit with runners in scoring position. And then we see Westberg hit a ball we think's a homer. It's off the top of the wall. And I just, like, second and third, one out. Austin Hayes strikes out. They're not taking advantage of opportunities. And they're getting hits. But when it's time to get the hit, like, they had nine hits last night. When it was time to get the hit, it's just not there.
They just haven't gotten the hit recently, and that's kind of why I asked Jacob the question. 52.8% of runs scored have been off homer. I mean, do you think this offense is too homer reliant?
It's not the 2016 Orioles.
That's where I'm at too. Where that's different. Yeah. I mean, that was all or nothing. You know, home run or strike.
Well, I used to say it was a beer league softball team. Like there was no athleticism really on that team. Adam Jones could run, but the rest of it, So I think that this team has shown in the past it can get it done doing other things. I think they will get back to that. It's unfortunate, and it seems to happen every year. And I'm sure it happens with every team. We just don't pay as close attention. But there's a point in time in every season where a team goes into a slump. The Yankees are like, they can't hit. Like, there's a period, and you try to hope that the slumps don't happen together, so one guy kind of carries you for a while until the next guy, because guys will slump, otherwise everybody's hitting .500. But am I concerned? I'm not happy, but I'm not concerned yet.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. And this is a tough stretch. I mean, they're 8-10 in their last 18 games. And what this Orioles team has done so well since bringing up Adley Rutschman in May 2022 is, of course, they don't get swept much. They've been swept twice in the regular season, of course, in the ALDS last year against the Rangers. And now it's about trying to avoid that third sweep this year. Pick up a win tonight and then head into that Yankees series, which should be a lot of fun.
Well, coming up next here on the program, Brandon Hyde. You heard a taste of what he said earlier today, but Brandon Hyde met with the media today. We'll get you the lineup, and you'll hear what Brandon Hyde has to say as the Orioles try to avoid the sweep tonight. Albert Suarez on the mound. Baltimore baseball tonight coming up at 5:30. Bob Haney, Jim Hunter, live at Pickles here on The Fan.